podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
So it's all for play for still?
I think so. Do you want to bet against us?
Very good evening to everybody, and it's a really, really late one. I know I said I'd be here at 9:30 to do this podcast, and I didn't even promote this on Twitter or anything because it's 11 o'clock at night, and I'm going to do a very, very quick 10-minute to 15-minute overview of Ruben Amorim. I could speak about him for quite a while, but I don't want to. As I say, I am very much not canvassing for one manager over any other ones. I just thought it was just interesting because this guy is the most kind of outside of left field manager that we've been linked with so far. Obviously, other managers we've been linked with, we kind of know what they're about. Some of them have managed in the Premier League before to some deal of success. And then obviously we've got other managers who have been linked that are out of work, that may have worked in the Premier League previously. So I just wanted to take a little look here at Ruben Amorim, just discuss him. And as I say, it's just basically that's all it is, not canvassing for him or anything. I do think he is a very, very good manager, but we'll see how it pans out. And should he be signed as Aston Villa manager, I will get somebody who's a lot more knowledgeable about Sporting Club de Futebol de Portugal to come on and to talk to us about him. I've got somebody lined up should he be made the new manager of Aston Villa. So let's take a little look at him, and less of me and more of Ruben Amorim. So that's what he looks like. Pretty strapping young man. He is a young man because he's only 37 years of age. I suppose if we were to talk about green flags or red flags with regards to him as a manager himself, he has the most bonkers ascent towards a managerial position that I've heard of in quite a while, because everything happened really, really quickly, and we will speak about that in a moment. But who is Ruben Amorim, and who has he? What has he achieved in his career, I suppose, so far? So let's take a look at his career. So Amorim played in his career as a midfielder, spending most of his professional career with Belenenses and Benfica, signing with the latter in 2008 and going on to win 10 major titles, including 3 league titles, 1 Taça de Portugal, 5 Taças de Liga, and 1 Supertaça. And you can pronounce the rest of that yourselves because my Portuguese is absolutely brutal. But he also represented Portugal in 2 FIFA World Cups, earning a total of 14 caps. A Benfica supporter, Ruben Amorim, it's one of those ones he had to put that aside when he became the Sporting Lisbon manager. And obviously the two of those teams do not like each other at all. And that is something he had to put aside. And he did it to great effect, as we will see later on with his managerial career and his short managerial career, should I say, with Sporting Lisbon, and his short managerial career in general. So let's have a little look at his managerial career, should I say. He started off his career with Casapia were in the third division of Portuguese football when he took over there. I don't have the details of how many games he managed, his win rates and so on like that with Casapia, but I do know that when he was managing Casapia, he was suspended because he didn't have the requisite managerial licenses at the time, and the club themselves actually took a 6-point penalty. And it was at that point during his suspension that he actually left the club. And he left the club, and a short period later he took up a position with Braga B after obtaining his licenses, and he went on to obtain further licenses with Braga B. While he was only there for 2 months, as we can see there, September 2019 to December 2019. And at that stage, Braga had sacked their manager and brought him into the hot seat. And we'll see why in a moment. He had a short period of time with Braga B, but in the short amount of matches that he did manage them, he had a fantastic record with them. Took over the main Braga gig in December 2019. And then in March 2020, Sporting Lisbon took a massive gamble on him. Huge, huge gamble on him. And we'll speak about that as well, because everybody could see what a good manager he was. They could see tactically advanced he was, and I suppose what he would do in a man management role with regards to his players. Braga actually, when they hired him as their manager, after only having them as his B team manager for 2.5 months, they put a 10 million euro release clause on his head. And 3 months after Braga signed him, Sporting Lisbon, Sporting Club de Portugal, whatever you want to call them, they came along and they paid that 10 million. At the time, Sporting were in dire straits. They needed someone to come in and change the culture of the club. They hadn't won the league in 19 years. I think it was 19 years is what it was. And they needed somebody to come in here, shake it up, make stuff happen. And they paid 10 million for a manager when they didn't exactly have the greatest finances behind them. And that manager was Ruben Amorim, as we can see here. And from then, from March 2020, the next year, he takes them to the league title. Takes them to the league title in Portugal. First league title in 19 years. And that actually blew my mind. I didn't know it had been that long since Sporting had won the title in Portugal. Because you'd always, you know, you think of the top three in Portugal that it would be. You'd think it would be Sporting, it would be Benfica, it would be Porto. But Sporting were very much drifting away. And they were becoming the poor relation of Benfica and Porto. And even to a lesser extent, to teams like Braga, who wouldn't have the financial clout that any of the rest of the top three that I mentioned there would have. And so he comes in there, he wins the league with Sporting, and he starts playing some really, I'm going to say it's uncomplex tactical. His tactics are very simple. They're not very complex at all. They may look complex, but they're very simple. But what he demands is real discipline in how you play, specifically in defence. He is a very good defensive coach. And as we'll see, with regards to the amount of goals that the teams concede, they don't concede an awful lot of goals. One of the things I forgot to mention here as well is during his time at Sporting, the Portuguese league in the coefficient rankings within Europe actually jumped above the French league to become the fourth best league within Europe. The fifth best league within Europe. I forgot all about Germany. So it actually leapfrogged the French league. And the majority of the reason for that is that the French league is more or less only won by one team, or it's dominated by PSG. And that does affect, I suppose, the competitive nature of the French league. But the Portuguese league, as I say, an awful lot of people will look at it and go, will look at the league and maybe poo-poo it slightly, but coefficiently and where it ranks within Europe would be in the top five leagues within Europe. So that is just something to bear in mind there as well. Above, the Dutch league, above the and recently above the French league, so I'm led to believe. Anyway, Ruben Amorim comes in, and how does he play? You know, what are his kind of statistics as a manager first, I suppose, before we look at how he plays. The big thing was he did come in at Sporting. He's played in European competition with Sporting since the day that he set foot inside there. Winning the league was absolutely huge for them. They finished second in the league last year. Now, this season so far, they've played a total of 9 games, I think. Is it 8 or 9 games? It's nine games. They've won 5, drawn 1, and lost 3 so far. But I can talk the context with regards to that in a moment also. I don't have a slide in it, but you would probably pick it up when I start talking about their tactical ability in a moment. His managerial statistics here, as I say, I don't have any statistics for his Cassiopeia travails. It wasn't that long at all. But when we look at Braga B, he only managed 11 games for Braga B, winning 8, drawing 2, losing 1, 27 goals for and 7 goals against, with a plus 20 goal difference and a 73% win rate. Then he goes to Braga. Guys, I wasn't lying when I said that his tenure at Braga and his meteoric rise was, that's exactly what it is. It's meteoric. 13 games with Braga A, the Braga senior team, the Braga A team, 10 wins, 1 draw, 2 losses, 27 goals for, 13 goals against, plus 14, 77% win rate for a team like Braga. And then he gets the gig at Sporting Lisbon. As I say, they paid 10 million to release him from his contract. The rumors are at the moment that he has a 30 million release contract in his contract at this, or release clause in his contract at this moment in time. Whether that is true or not, I've absolutely no idea. But since he's taken over Sporting, he's played 122 games, 86 wins, 16 draws, 20 losses. Goals for 232 against 105, and a goal difference of plus 127 with a 71% win rate. That's in all competitions. So, you know, I haven't looked at any of your comments, guys, so I don't know if anybody has said this already. And I know there's going to be a lot of people talking about Premier League experience. I'm talking about Ruben Amorim. We have been linked to Ruben Amorim. I think it's important to speak about people that we're linked to. So that's why I'm bringing this up. The Portuguese league, as I say, Sporting were drifting in the mid table of the Portuguese league. Financially, they were not in a good spot as well. This guy came in, changed the culture within the team, had won them a league in his first full season. And he's only 37 years of age, and he's got a really good win rate. He performed pretty decently in Europe. Yes, they did get hammered by Man City last season in the Champions League. He was without sin throw the first stone in that aspect. There are a lot of teams that got hammered last year by Man City, and they did get a bit of a drubbing by Man City in the Champions League last season. Marseille gave him a bit of a hiding in Europe this season, mostly because I'm almost certain Sporting's goalkeeper was sent off really early in that game, or he went off injured and then another player sent off or something. Maybe they might have even had two players sent off early in that game. I can't really remember, but I remember there was context towards that as well. But as we can see there, with a team like Sporting, transformed them mostly on the cultural side of things. And he also used youth players as well in his first season. I will talk a small bit in a moment about maybe some criticisms that he has come in for recently, because it hasn't been, as I say, by Sporting standards, 5 wins, 1 draw, and 3 losses. They're sitting 5th in the league at the moment. They're 1 win away from getting up into 3rd in the league. And are, I think, from memory, I think they're about 7 points off top. But that's considered a bad start for Sporting at the moment. But we'd snap your hand off at the wrist for something along those lines with Aston Villa Football Club. I'm going to pause for a moment. I'm going to take a look at some of the comments. I haven't opened any of the comments yet, but I am going to pause and take a look at some of the comments. So firstly, we have Aston Villa fan says, how are you? How are you doing? And Gaz says, hi, hello, boys. And it's Chloe Kyle. True Magpie, I'm so sorry. You were just about to go to sleep when your McGrath pod alert pings. Thanks, William, for not snoozing it and coming on to watch. Sean Green asks, do I ever sleep? It's debatable at the moment. It's debatable at the minute. Jonas says, stupid sacking. League 2 next. Problem is above. Fill in the gaps there for me, Jonas. Is it Stephen Gerrard? Was a stupid sacking, and we're going to get relegated to League Two? Is it? Look, I'm not talking about Stephen Gerrard. Not the Stephen Gerrard podcast. We're just going to go down here a small bit more. Oh, excellent. Matt Hayes is at Tottenham versus Sporting game on Wednesday. You'll put in a good word. Maybe you mightn't have a chance to. Maybe he'll already be in Birmingham at that stage. Well, we hope he will be pretty soon. We hope it's not a long drawn out affair anyway at this moment in time. But if you could bring the 30 million in a briefcase in unmarked sequential bills, Matt, that would be fantastic, and just hand it over to him on our behalf. You know, that might be nice to get it over the line, as I say. Tree Engine RBO says CV really lacking. I'm not sure it is, just because he's a young manager. I think he's done quite a lot. He's won the league. He's finished second, and he's gotten to the knockout stages in Europe. So I suppose if it's 100% okay to look for somebody more experienced. I actually agree in a lot of aspects with regards to Ruben Amorim. He very nearly became the PSG coach after Mauricio Pochettino was sacked earlier on this season. And, that's how highly he's held in Europe as well. But it's okay. It's 100% okay to look for more experience. That is a red flag with this guy as well. Having such a short time to come up through the ranks within management, he has hit his stride with Sporting in a better league. I think everybody can agree, than maybe the Scottish League or something like that. And he's performed really well against in European competition too. There's one here. It looks promising, but I'm on the fence. Feels like a gamble. I think, to be honest with you, the Alfa Ryu, I think anybody is going to be a gamble at the moment, because unless it is somebody like a big name like Pochettino. But look, as I say, there's a lot saying that he's turned this down at the moment. I believe everything and I disbelieve everything that I hear at this moment in time. We'll know when we know who the manager is. And I just think that it's nice to have a look at these guys as they are linked there. Anyway, let's let's move on towards some small piece of tactical analysis. Now, I was going to go into more detail in this from a slide point of view, but I'm just going to talk through it. So tactically, what Ruben Amorim has traditionally played is like a 3-4-3 kind of formation, 5-3-5, 5-2-3, 5-3-2, 4, you know, his team is fluid in both defending and attack. And I think that I think it's interesting because the way that he plays might actually suit some of the players we have. We're going to be missing one or two key ingredients. I'm not missing them, but I can't really identify one ingredient in particular that we would need to fit into to the way that we played in 2021 when he won the league. And that's basically a guy we just saw last night, João Polinha. He was absolutely fantastic for them. He was one of Ruben Amorim's big players. Needed him, was very, very pivotal within his team, because where you look at those two guys there in midfield, that double pivot in there need to be very industrious. And one of them does need to have a bully boy mentality. And potentially it could be somebody like Leo Dendoncker with Aston Villa. But as I say, João Polinha was definitely that guy there. He played alongside another man who'd come to the Premier League in Mateus Nunes as well. And the two of them had a really, really good understanding. Nunes was more of an attacking player, obviously playing with Wolves now at the moment. He was much more of an attacking player, but he did play in that kind of deep pivot that started here. So the way that the team usually sets up is they set up with three at the back. Sebastian Quetta is obviously with Liverpool previously, is the captain for Sporting Lisbon at the moment. He anchors down that middle of the back three, and there's a right footer and a left footer either side of him. I think that the centre halves that we have can definitely play this. Quetta actually steps forward a small bit more to kind of create almost a libero type of player. So he almost steps forward and leaves the other two guys then to cover him behind. They're more astute players. They're more athletic players. So if you think of this, Aston Villa could maybe have a Bednarak in the middle and maybe have a Mings on the left, Konsa on the right. And essentially what we would do is we would almost set up the way that we set up at the end of last season when our fullbacks were higher, except we'd have three defending as opposed to two. The big thing here is it's not that difficult to set up like this. And Ruben Amorim doesn't make it difficult. He's very much a kind of a manager who simplifies his tactics, simplifies his movement, specifically within that back five and that two-man mid-block that they have here. Up front, he needs to have some mavericks. He needs to have players needs to have at least one positionless player like he had with, what's that guy's name? Pedro Gonzalez, I think his name is. I can't pronounce his surname. But really great up-and-coming player. Himself, Nunes, and Polinha were the big men for them last season, and they were the pivotal guys, and all those guys played in that kind of midfield triangle. And that's one of the things that when I speak about triangles there, that's one of the things that the Amorim tries to set up. It's very much based on those triangles. Like, I don't know, I'm trying to, like, I listened to a podcast to them some times ago, and they said that he tries to create at any given time 10 triangles on the field so you can work in unison, so players can work in unison. But, and this is something that might resonate with some Aston Villa fans, is lots and lots, if not everything, does go through their wingbacks. Those wingbacks stay wide. They're given a license. They get back quickly, but they do stay wide. And when we look at where they are in an attacking sense here, the central striker and Polinha, who is the defensive midfielder, Polinha, he drops back. And when the attack starts, he searches for the deepest midfielder, and he sticks on him, and he becomes that advanced pivot. He's not a massive target man. I think he's about 6'1" or whatever, but the team doesn't need a massive target man, doesn't want a massive target man. He sticks back. The two wide or inverted forwards, should I say, there, like we would have the inverted tens, if you want to call them the way that Steven Gerrard played, they almost push up onto the center halves. And then they start moving. You have your positionless player. There's one positionless player there. It starts to drag around. Obviously, Polinha, because he is the striker, does rejoin the attack. But what he does is he creates that advanced pivot, needs to be a very busy player. I can think one of those that plays for Aston Villa. Maybe doesn't have the finishing product that we would all like, but somebody who will definitely be able to drop deep like that. Doesn't need to be a target man, doesn't need to be standing under the ball, but just needs to be able to take the ball into him. That does need to improve. And maybe then he's got the wing-backs. Wing-backs will get up close to him. There will be an option for him. The deep pivots will push forward a small bit. They will also be an option for him. And then he can rejoin his central attack. Very much the way that that Sporting played last season is it gets quicker as the attack builds up. Very disciplined in defence. And as you begin to attack, the attack gets quicker. I have a couple of notes written down here. So from watching some of his stuff, I think a big thing is that the forwards need to run between defences, between defenders. It's a big part of his game. Slide rule passes, making sure that the two inverted forwards are busy as opposed to trying to find an area, trying to be in an area where people know they're going to be so they can pass them the ball. They need to be busy. They need to be hunting space. They need to attack centrally because our wide players are two wide fullbacks. They are the people who take up the space out wide. The defend or the strikers, the three, they attack centrally as much as they possibly can. He doesn't need a target man, but he does need somebody that will be an advanced pivot. Yes, I said that already. One of the biggest things that you'll find when they do lose the ball, when Sporting lose the ball high up the field, is they retreat really quickly. The fullbacks get back. The three at the back never really go too far. Yes, one does step up like I've shown there. That's purposely shown. He does step up there to create a little triangle. That's Sebastian Coates, usually not the most athletic player, but the reason he steps up into that position is because the two boys are there beside him. And it also it creates an almost a false high line, which encourages teams to kind of try and play him behind. But the two center halves are there. So it's not rocket science. The way that he plays, what he does is he covers off areas in the field, stops passing lanes, and he will see that they'll be so resolute in defence. They'll be very defensively disciplined. They play with that 5-2 block, if you want to call it that, mid block, whatever way you want to describe it. And they'll always look to run, like when they're hassling and when they're chasing, they'll run to cover players, and they'll try and shadow players in the wide positions. You'll very rarely see a 4-5 man press from the team. It's normally only presses with three, and the majority of the pressing is done by one of the two pivots and the three strikers. So the three strikers have to be super busy, and I think that's one thing you could probably say that our strikers can be if they aren't the finishing isn't there from them. I would still be all for upgrading our strike force, and I think everybody would be here as well, regardless of who comes in. The wingbacks are pivotal. Wingbacks are very, very pivotal. I want to speak about those for a moment. I'm just looking at some notes that I've written down here. Wingbacks seem to move with the play, so they move up and down the field with the play. You'll very rarely see that the wingback will be the overload ball. They'll very rarely see that they'll be like a Gary Neville overlap, like pop bombing up the wing trying to get there. They move more so with the play as an option, but they do get high, and they do get into that high, get into a pretty high position because they have an opportunity to, because there's always four, if not five, men left behind. So they attack with six and they defend with four. Usually that's how they do it. And that to me sounds pretty sound, to be honest with you. As I say, the setup in both attack and defense in the transitions there is all about creating triangles, all about creating an option left and right, all about trying to spread the field wide with our fullbacks while also keeping a man behind you at all times to kind of to mind the house. And I like that. What else have I written down here? I wanted to talk about Pedro Gonzalez, Palinha, and Mateus Nunes. So the two central midfielders, as we would know them here, they would be, as I said, Palinha, who's now playing with Fulham, and Mateus Nunes. They were really busy. Nunes was all over the place. He was everywhere. He was that pivot man or that metronome man. The ball would come to him, quick passes all over the place. Really, really stood out. That's how he got his big move to Wolves. More of an attacking player that dropped deep, that was dropped deep by Amorim, was the way that I saw him, into that kind of six, that kind of from a 10 into an 8 position, almost into a 6 position there. But the position, as I said, that I think may be missing is the Palinha position, that bully position. Boubacar Kamara would very likely take up that position when he is fit. Maybe you would see a Kamara and a Dendonker in there. I'm not 100% sure. Maybe John McGinn could play that role that Matheus Nunes played, because you need to be very, very athletic. You need to be very quick. You need to have a good engine. And I think for all the faults and failings that we would say about John McGinn, he does have a good engine to get around the field. Albeit we all know his pass completion rate needs to get right up there, because at this moment in time and over the last 12 months, it hasn't been there. And that's one of the biggest criticisms for him as well. But Pedro Gonzalez, he would have played on the left-hand side of the front three, with Pablo Sarabia playing on the right-hand side. Sarabia has now moved on. I can't remember who he's moved to, but they did form an unbelievable partnership up there. The team needs that positionless player, and that positionless player was Pedro Gonzalez. And you're going to see him. He's still with Sporting at the moment. You're going to see him at he's going to be somebody that will just bounce off the page. If you look at any Portuguese game, watch him. He's one of the starlets of Portuguese football at this moment in time. And you know, the team ticks with somebody who can play that positionless position. I don't know if it's going to be a Coutinho, a Buendia. I've no idea. It's not for me to decide that, but that's what Ruben Amorim played with. And I think that that's a really it's a really interesting position that I think that when we look at the way that he sets up Villa, in the main, I would say 90% of the types of players that you would need to fit into a Ruben Amorim team, Aston Villa would have. So when we talk about why is he being targeted, yes, he's got it. Yes, his experience level is low. It's obvious. Obvious that that's the case. He's been really successful in a short period of time. Really, really successful. And he's shown some good tactical setups. Maybe he's being targeted for the simple fact that, you know, the brain trust or the footballing men who are there, they can see that maybe we have the players that immediately fit into the system that he plays. Yes, it's going to take tweaking. Yes, it's going to take some gelling. It's going to take some work on the coaching field. But that's what the World Cup break would be. I don't envisage an awful lot of our players will be at the World Cup. Not a lot of players at all will be at the World Cup, I would say. So maybe our goalkeeper, but from our outfield playing positions, you know, we will have quite a lot of people back in Ballymore Heath. And I would imagine that there would be more than a mini off-season held then. I would imagine it would be almost a full off-season. Ruben Amorim is a colourful character in interviews. There's a touch of the Mourinho's about him in interviews, specifically with the... he has been known to say in an interview, and look, once again, I put my hands up here and I say, I've given out about Steven Gerrard turning around and saying, this guy needs to be better. Amorim does it from time to time as well. And sometimes he will sit there and he will have a pretty colourful interview as well, from time to time. Whether he's won a game or whether he's lost a game. That's one little thing I would mention about him. I've been listening to a lot of Sporting Lisbon podcasts today and today more so, since the news broke. And I did listen to one or two of them that said that potentially, because of the success he's brought to Sporting Lisbon, that some fans are looking for him to be sacked because he's lost three games at the start of the season already. And one of the podcasts was saying there was one guy on it who thinks he should be sacked because they've lost three games and they see it as regression after winning the league and finishing second last season. They did lose to Vazrim, I think they're called, in the cup at the weekend, who are a third division team. But listen, he'll fit in very well at Aston Villa if he loses the third division teams in the cup. or if he loses to Manchester United. So can't really hold that one against him. But in the main, the fans absolutely love him. Obviously, they brought him their first title in 19 years. So that's, as I say, it was a bit of an outlier, but it's important to mention it because you will find online after that defeat last week in the Cup that some fans were calling for him to be sacked. But I don't think the board will sack him. I don't think the board could afford to sack him. He does only have 18 months left in his contract as well. That is something that is well known. So with this 30 million release clause of Sport, I would imagine if Villa really did want him, and that was a position that was maybe a stumbling block, maybe Sporting hold out for that. But with 18 months in his contract, I think that he would be able to come to some sort of agreement there. The club are not rich. Sporting Lisbon are not rich. So when I saw this morning that it was going to be very difficult to tempt him away from the club, I think that's probably more so from the fact that he has had conversations, and it's been reported that PSG were very high in signing him before they brought in, these names escapes me. Is it Galtier that they've brought in there? But they were very high on potentially signing this guy as Pochettino's replacement at PSG. And I think thinking along the lines when he's been having like those names kind of mentioned, and he was mentioned with regards to some other clubs as well. Manchester United apparently were even sniffing. I couldn't see stuff on that. I couldn't even read it on Twitter. I couldn't see any links towards that. But, so he is highly thought of amongst Europe. Whether he works in the Premier League, I could not tell you. Whether he works for Aston Villa, I could not tell you. Whether he signs for Aston Villa, I could not tell you. But he's an interesting character. He's an interesting review. And I would advise you guys, I don't like to advise people to do this, but watch a couple of the highlights of a couple of games, not even highlights, but you'll find full games on YouTube. And if you've nothing to do and you're a saddo like me, sit down and watch them on double or treble the speed if you can download it or find a way to convert it, pop it into a video player and watch it at double the speed or whatever. And you'll just see the way players move around, or even 1.5 times the speed. It's an interesting watch. He's a very simplistic tactical overview. It's all about covering spaces. It's all about making sure there's a man behind you so that you don't commit too far forward, being disciplined in defence, and realistically just having a blank canvas for his strikers up top. But as I say, that has its difficulties as well. I'm going to leave it at that. This is supposed to be a 10-minute podcast. It's 31 minutes. It's 25 minutes past 11. I will come to some of your comments first before I leave because I am absolutely neglected those there for a while. Marine Boy says, Gerrard had better stats than that. At Rangers, I couldn't tell you what Gerrard's stats were at Rangers, but Scotland is a significant poorer league than Portugal. So that is always born into fact, I think, when we look at any statistics, for sure. Where else are we there? What kind of football does he play? Hopefully, I described what type of football he plays there. Michael Byrne had it up there. Where else are we there? Sorry, guys. Sorry. There's a couple of people saying Gerrard vibes off him. That's okay. I don't know. I see that the team plays completely different to the way Rangers did at a higher level of football as well. But as I say, that's cool. The experience thing I can for sure admit is on par, if not worse. He's less experienced than Steven Gerrard did, or at least on par. I'm not 100% sure. I don't know what Gerrard's statistics were before he came to Villa with Rangers. But yeah, as I say, that is a fair cop and fair criticism, I suppose, as well. Where else are we? Matt says Herbert Chapman vibes off that attacking formation. Yeah, we take that. We take that as well. Where else are we here, guys? Guys, I'm actually going to abandon the comments. Apologies. I just don't know where they are, and some of them are disappearing here in front of me. The system does have a bit of a glitchy side to it from time to time, and it's 11:30, so I'm afraid in case I start reading things wrong and start accusing people of telling of saying stuff that maybe or misconstruing stuff, you know, that I read in the comments. And as I say, no, it's too late for that at this minute in time. As I say, guys, thanks so much for watching. I hope that, you know, as I say, this is just a a piece that I did in him. Feel free to form your own opinion. Put the comments in underneath, as I say. Go away. Do a small bit of research on him. Read about him. Watch some of the games. Look up some of the... Like, you'll find stuff on there's lots of websites that have written about him very, very... extensively and explained him. They explained that he is this guy who's kind of taken European football by storm, and that European football is in love with him. There were, anyway, up to about 6 or 7 months ago. I'm sure it is exactly the same. A lot of the articles you will read will be from about May of last year, April, May of last year. But have a read of him, and as I say, form your own opinions on him. I think he's an interesting character. I'm not canvassing for anyone here. If he does come in, I give him all my support, and if he doesn't come in, well then, there'll be a reason that the club didn't sign him. But he's a 37-year-old up and coming manager that has had a lot of success in his short period of time he's been at the club he's been at, and I think that we should all get to know who our prospective new managers may be, even if they don't come to the club anyway. So hopefully this is beneficial for you guys. If you did like it, give us a thumbs up. If you are not a subscriber to the podcast, please subscribe to the podcast. And I might be back tomorrow if something breaks. But if not, I won't be here with any other managerial kind of profiles or anything like that. Sunday, I might get around to a couple of them after the game or during the game or between or before the game, depending on how boring the game is. And I might do one or two guys that are in the Premier League at the moment. So we'll take a look at those. But if you like them, thanks. If you don't, thanks as well. And if there's anybody that you'd like me to try and maybe fling something together on, just let me know on Twitter, and I'd be delighted to do that. But anyway, thanks very much, guys. Really appreciate you staying up this late. Enjoy the rest of your Friday afternoon, and all that's left to say is up the Villa. Podcast Network.